Welcome to the Auto Fire Power Hour. Ray.
Brian.
It is so good to be back.
Yeah.
In Switzerland.
Yes. This is coming from Switzerland.
Yeah.
It's our European tour.
Yeah. And well, we're on tour with Manowar.
Yeah.
As Joey DeMaio has very pointed out on social media.
Yeah. Well, as it happens, they've reached out.
Yeah.
And, we went and checked the logs.
Huge Clock Tower fans, though.
Turns
guys.
Out we've got a fan in Switzerland.
Yeah. And
that's where Gary lives.
Gary's in Switzerland, and he's the he's Gary DeMaio,
yeah.
The cousin of the main man of behind Manowar, Joey
yeah.
DeMaio.
It all worked out.
Yeah, it's full circle. You know, yep. to Hakuna Matata, it's the whole thing.
Yep.
So on our last episode, we smartened up the people to the first half of our mutual top tens.
Yeah.
And again, to double down there, triple down even, what we are saying is that these are our favorite games of all time, and fuck off, they're the best video games of all time.
Yeah, they're both. They're one and the same.
And there's some hot takes in there. I do think that Splatterhouse is one of the best games ever made, and there are probably people out there who say that that is wrong. And conversely...
Some people might not agree with Daytona USA being one of the top 10 best games ever made in the history of video game production.
Right.
And those people would be wrong, in my opinion.
Sure. See, I didn't say in my opinion. Very strategically did not say in my opinion.
Well,
I just said those people are wrong.
We also talked about top 10 lists at their core are subjective.
Yeah.
So I recognize that.
I don't. I'm far more.
You don't recognize.
No,
yeah,
I don't. Okay. Fuck them. I don't give a shit about what those people think.
So this is two parts of a three-part episode. Next
yeah.
part will be combining your list and my list to make an.
To them, the master list.
And I can tell by your stubbornness in the fact that you won't necessarily agree that your list is subjective.
Well, especially if I'm looking
we're
at our sevens.
We're gonna have some problems.
I look at our number sevens and Splatterhouse versus Daytona USA. That could be a bloodbath.
Yeah,
and that's why we need the help of Uncle Bob to be able to cut through and find the real victor there.
Yeah, because he'll be coming on as the judge.
Yes,
and we're gonna need that because you're right. I do not see us getting past seven.
No, it is not gonna be. It's not gonna be an easy challenge.
Like we could probably work through 10 through 8. You
well,
know?
There's a couple, not to give too much away, but there's a handful of games that are on both of our lists,
mm-hmm.
which I think speaks to the quality of those games.
Sure.
And those ones, we'll figure out an easy system so where clearly those are going to merge.
Yeah, we can work that out.
Yeah.
Right?
The fact that they're on both of our lists, clearly
yeah.
they're going to stay
they're
on the master list. They have to.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the ordering will be off. I could see one where, no, that's easy. but, some of the other ones... We'll have to fight those battles to see where they do end up on the master list.
But we will come to a Splatterhouse versus Daytona USA type scenario.
Yes.
Where it's going to get ugly.
Well, that specific scenario is coming.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you now before that fight starts that I've always appreciated your company. And, we'll just see at the end of this if we remain friends or not.
Yeah, we jumped into this with very high hopes.
Yeah.
Quickly realizing... This is probably a terrible
idea. It's going to get violent. Yeah, it's going to get violent. But that's fine. That's fine. That's a part of the magic. So before we jump into the top five through one, as we wind these lists down, there's a couple things I wanted to talk about in the world of comings and goings in video games. So a couple months back, early January, I think. The Nintendo Online Store
mm-hmm.
was running a hot deal, hot special. I think I texted it to you, but I don't think you moved on it. But they were offering those, if you are an online service subscriber, you are entitled to the privilege to be able to give Nintendo more money
mm-hmm.
to buy these exclusive controllers. And they had a deal where it was 50% off. You got the two-pack of NES controllers.
Oh, yeah.
So originally those are $60, which I always balked at. Because I have the NES Classic, and
mm-hmm.
Those controllers are, if I want to play an NES game, I'll just play that thing.
Yeah.
But at $30 for a two-pack, well, then I'd be a fool to not move on that. So I did, and I gotta say...
They gotcha.
Man, did they get me. Well, they always get me. I'm a fucking sucker.
Yeah, you do have all the amiibos.
Not all of them. I would have had to mortgage my home.
You have enough for me to think you have.
That's fair. That is true. I have enough amiibos to where it looks like I have them all, but I do not. And the people that do have them all, kudos to them because that's fucking dedication. Some of the amiibos were so goddamn hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Mega Yarn Yoshi. I did really want that because I love Yoshi. My wife also loves Yoshi, the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was in stores for a heartbeat. And now if you want to buy that thing, it's like hundreds of dollars. But you know, hey, that's Amiibos. That's for another episode called Brian, A Sad Excuse of Living, my personal memoir, which we will add to our Patreon.
The Amiibo memoir.
Yeah, the Amiibo memoir. So anyway, these back to these NES controllers. Hot damn. I'm really, really glad I bought these fucking things.
Okay.
There's a couple features that I didn't even realize were a thing until I actually got them in my hands and play with them.
Okay.
So number one, and like what I think is like the neatest, niftiest fucking thing about these controllers is that you can plug them. You plug them onto your Switch just like Joy-Con to charge them, mm-hmm. but you can actually also use them while undocked. So, for example, I was playing the Arcade Archives release of Donkey Kong mm-hmm. with two vertically suited NES controllers attached to my Switch, and like the D-pad is a fucking NES D-pad, so it's perfect. And then all you need in that game is one button. So, you know, you just push the A button. The way the right side controllers is oriented, you have the A and B button like right on top of each other.
Right.
Which ergonomically is actually pretty difficult. Like, because I wanted to play like Mario World with it, for example. Mm-hmm. But being able to hold down one button and jump with the other is actually like kind of painful when it's straight up and down like that.
Yeah.
It's exactly why Nintendo made the diamond shape configuration with the Super Nintendo to begin with. But games that utilize only like directional control and like one button, it's really fun to play your Switch this way. I'm just gonna say it.
Okay.
And you look like a wizard because you're holding this like fucking newfangled like just ridiculous looking system. But I actually the other cool thing is you can slide the Joy-Con bumpers onto them.
Okay.
And then that raises up the trigger buttons.
Okay.
So I bought the Mega Man collection. Mm-hmm. The more modern one, the one that includes like 7 and 8 and 9, blah blah blah.
Okay.
Those ones are really, really fun to play with an NES controller. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. Like, more fun than I ever thought would be to play a modern Mega Man game.
Hmm.
I played most of Mega Man 11 with an NES controller, too.
Okay.
And, like, you do sacrifice some buttons, obviously, because there's only the triggers and then A, B, select, and start. And it's very, very, very annoying that there's no home button to be able to go back to the menu.
Sure.
But if you have your, like, a Joy-Con handy or a Pro Controller, then that's your fucking detached home button there. It would have.
So they're actually quite smaller than a normal NES?
Absolutely not. They're full-size NES controllers.
Oh, they are?
Which is exactly why you look like a wizard idiot when you have them attached to your Switch.
Okay. I had imagined it incorrectly.
Yeah. So, anyway, I don't recommend them for $60, but if they ever do another sale where it's 50% off, like, totally get them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, like, the main thing that you would use them for, the actual NES Switch stuff, you know, you're playing the games the way that you should be with an NES controller.
Sure.
I actually enjoyed these controllers so much so that I didn't want to get the Super Nintendo one either, because it was like, well, I already own, like, you know, roughly 10 dozen fucking Super Nintendo controllers.
Yeah.
But I liked these ones.
Various forms.
Yeah. I liked these NES ones so much that when the Super Nintendo one went back in stock, because it was sold out for forever.
For a long time.
And just recently they put it back in the store. So I bought that one and I am patiently awaiting that to be delivered at my house.
Okay.
So as a sucker, which I very clearly am when it comes to Nintendo products,
mm-hmm.
I must say I have spent worse money on worse things, such as all the Amiibo that I bought.
When it comes to fanboy product, this is an A+.
Yeah, I totally recommend it, just not at full price. So be patient, and I bet another sale will happen at some point.
Okay.
But they're really, really well made. They feel exactly like the controllers that they are inspired from,
mm-hmm.
and they're all wireless, so you know you can't lose. Also, I think you can. I think it's with the newest version of Steam. Steam now natively supports any Switch controller, so you can also play retro games on Steam mm-hmm. with these NES controllers too,
right.
Which is fucking great. It's just another use and application for you to do this.
Yeah, you're getting multi use out of that device. That's
It's a hoot. It's a hoot, daddy.
Increase your investment.
Yeah,
benefit.
And
right
that's
there.
What all video game purchases are. Clearly,
yeah.
Is investments.
Yeah,
educated investments.
No, I'm just saying you're dragging out the money you spent on this. Good.
Yes.
It's good. It's positive.
What about you? Is there any new life upgrades? Any fucking rigmaroles?
I briefly mentioned it last episode, but I did buy a 32X.
Let's explore that a little bit more.
Okay.
All you did was you mentioned that you bought a 32X.
Yep.
So we did a long, long, long time ago, We did a humdinger doozy of an episode.
Yeah, we did a 32X top 10.
Well, it was a part of our greater 32X episode, our coverage there. But yeah, it did end with a top 10, which is kind of funny because, like, you know, there's like...
Let's call it coverage because then it sounds like current events.
Exactly. Yeah. It was coverage. It was 100% coverage. Journalistic coverage.
Yeah.
And it's funny to say a top 10 32X games because... You would be hard pressed to
you're
pick.
You're forced to pick half of them.
Yeah. Well, and you just like try to name 10 good 32X games. But we did.
I
really feel like we did.
Yeah, I thought we did a good job.
So when it comes to you finally getting, because I know that you've owned 32X games for like forever.
Yeah.
But you just never had a thing to play them with.
I have a few of them on my shelf. And I've owned a 32X before. I owned a 32X in the mid 90s.
Right.
So definitely experienced 32Xer. But. Yeah, no, I mean, it really comes down to at one time in my life, I had what is the ultimate system in my mind.
The Tower of Power.
Which is a Tower of Power, which is the Model 1 Sega CD, Model 1 Genesis 32X.
See, I obviously have the utmost respect for your version of the Tower of Power.
Mm-hmm.
Personally speaking, this is my setup and the one I like the most because of the footprint. I like a Genesis 1 with the additional like boat attachment and then the Model 2 Sega CD.
Yeah,
so you basically
have a Frankenstein.
Well, you have a system that's like 4 feet wide.
Yeah,
and then you throw a 32X mushroom topper in there.
No, I understand why you like that one.
Yeah, but you're saying you're more of a fan of verticality.
Yes,
I'm a suburb kitty cat, and I like that wide plains look.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I like. You're more of a you're city.
You like
folk.
To take real estate. Yeah,
right.
Like
you're city
grow
folk.
Up.
I like to have a yard. That's the difference.
Yeah, it's an apartment of video games.
Yeah, exactly.
So I bought a 32X because I know eventually I need to get a Model 1, but they're so expensive. And so like in looking into it, because of my – I invested a lot of money into making sure that like the video quality and the audio output of every system I have is the absolute best that it can possibly
perform. Right. Yeah, you're real big. You're a big tinkerer in that category. You love that shit.
The AV is fantastic on any system you play. So, but the 32X presents a problem because...
There's no RGB support, right?
There is RGB support, but the stereo coming out of the Model 1, the only way to get stereo
out
of
the headphone port.
Yeah, so when you play a 32X game, it's in stereo, but when you play a Model 1 game, or a Genesis game, it's in mono.
Okay.
Because the audio comes out of the Genesis. And then when you get a Sega CD, you have the same problem through the Genesis Model 1, unless you use the stereo out on the Sega CD itself.
Right.
So I had to go searching around and, there's these folks that make a cable, a Model 1 to 32X adapter cable that also has the audio pin to go into the stereo front.
I've seen this. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
So then it takes the audio from the front of the Model 1, sends it through the 32X and then you get stereo on everything.
See, I have a Model 1 that, the Magician Lord himself, Quan, modded years ago, probably like at this point, like 10 years ago. So it has its component out. This is obviously before all of the fucking RGB shit had swept the nation.
Yeah.
But it's component out, and then he pulled stereo sound from the headphone port. But he put in two RCA jacks on the back.
Okay, it's built in.
Yeah,
the,
so it's built into it. And I use my 32X in that, and then I never bought. Like I thought about doing an S video mod because it's relatively easy to do. I have rudimentary soldering skills, but it's like a mod that even I can do. But I just never, for me, like it's never been important enough, to be honest with you. Like there is three 32X games that are unique to the 32X that I appreciate and I think are good games. Colibri, Chaotix, and of course, Virtual Fighter. Beyond that, you could say I'm a 32X skeptic.
Right.
I think most people. Yeah, I'm in the majority there.
But if you're going to have a 32X, what I didn't want to do is like be stuck in this position. Like, because stereo sound is cool.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I didn't want to be in this position where like, okay, anytime I play a Genesis game, I need to take out my 32X to get stereo sound.
Yeah.
So I found this cable and it exists. So you can easily use a Genesis Model 1 with 32X and maintain stereo sound.
That is neat.
Just by buying this, you know, $10 cable.
So what, let me ask you this. What 32, okay, aside from Virtua Fighter, what 32X game are you looking forward to like giving your full attention to once you have your thing all set up?
I don't think I have anything on my list. Like I'm literally doing this just to look at the Tower of Power.
Well, and also
that's my main motivation. Obviously, I mean, you can go back to the episode, and I mean, you named a few of them.
Yeah.
Knuckles Chaotix, like, I would love to go back and dive into a little bit more because it's been years and years and years since I played that game.
I think that, and I think I mentioned this on our 32X episode, but if I didn't, I'll say it here. I think that Chaotix is criminally underrated.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that means something because I, you know,
I agree.
I do not, I don't share that love of Sonic the Hedgehog that that you do. But I think that a lot of people, especially when it first came out, a lot of people shit all over Chaotix because like they didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
And I think if you actually give that game your attention and like figure it out, the rubber banding mechanic, it becomes really playable. And it is like probably the most graphically impressive 32X game. Like there
it looks really cool.
Dude, and it's fucking the amount of color, because that's like it's a showpiece for the color palette that the 32X can do.
Yep.
Like there's colors that I didn't even know existed in that game. And it's just it just burns into your retinas. It's fucking awesome.
You know, as a great segue into our top 10 lists, one thing that I think is surprising to you is I have no Sonic game on my top 10.
I thought for sure that your number one game would have been Sonic 3 and Knuckles. And the fact that it wasn't, so I was like kind of concerned. I was like, are you okay? Did you swim in any foreign bodies of water? Is there a parasite growing inside of your brain now?
You're not Ray.
Yeah. Exactly. It was concerning.
No, I mean, Sonic 3 Knuckles would probably be number 11.
Well, and you've said on this show, you've said that you believe that Sonic 3 and Knuckles is the greatest 2D platformer of all time.
Yeah, but also, if you look at my list, there's no 2D platformer.
Ah, that is fair. So that is indicative of how you maybe, in a big grand scheme, feel about the genre.
So I talked about this on the last show, but the way that I chose games is genre. I did have a focus on genres. Like, I wanted certain genres to be represented.
Got it.
I thought some genres made bigger contributions to video game history than others. And then I wanted games to be immersive, challenging, and oh man, I feel like Rick Perry on the
You need Ron Paul to fucking dig you out of here.
Jump in.
Oops. That shit was so good.
Immersive, challenging, and enjoyable.
There you go.
And I do think Sonic 3 is all that. And I do think when it comes to 2D platformers, I do think it's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I can argue for it. But if you look at all my other games, I think in the immersion category, they're just so much more of an immersion from a video game experience that 2D,
oh, I'll agree 2D, with that all day long.
2D platformers just like there's only so much immersion you can get from 2D platformers.
Yeah, I agree with that. One, especially, no offense, especially Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Well,
famously, like, we recorded a Let's Play back when we were dabbling with that concept, and like, you explained to me all the shit that was going on that from like a narrative standpoint, that it flew over my head as hard as anything has ever flown over my head.
Even though it's clearly in the game.
Well, okay. Again, like it took a lot of your explaining for me to understand that. Right. And then, for example, what I picked as my number 8, Super Metroid, it's the polar opposite, where like you would have to be like severely visually impaired to not be able to understand the visual story that they were telling in that game.
So that being said, all of our games, I believe, as I'm looking at it, when it comes to immersion and walking a player into the experience, none of them are very descriptive or have long introductions that you have to, like, because a lot of modern games are like, to me, like, take, they don't let the game tell its own story,
And
they don't let the player learn the game just by experimenting,
right?
And the design of a good game like just walks a player through the world without having to tell the player what to do.
Exactly.
And all of these games, I mean, even Chrono Trigger, because JRPGs, like, you know, introductory levels of the game can sometimes be tedious.
Yeah,
and Chrono Trigger does a fantastic job just letting you play around in this like amusement.
There's
park
only there is like a very, very brief like battle tutorial.
Yeah,
that takes place super early on, as it would. It takes, you know, play very early on in the game, and then never again does it tell you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a lot in Chrono Trigger that you can explore and uncover on your own, which is part of the magic. Should we jump in? Should we do this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, I'll start the volley. Okay. And then we'll go back and forth, of course. So for me, my number five actually was your number 10.
Right.
I put Metal Slug 3 up there in my top five. I'm going to go ahead and echo everything you said about that game, which is to say that you praised its animation, you praised its gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things are true. For me, though, on a personal level, what I like, then this definitely goes, it colors my opinion of the game and why it's so high up. When I had always been an etic observer of Neo Geo because I grew up as poor white trash.
Yep.
You don't get Neo Geos in your home when that happens. Obviously, you could go to arcades.
A Neo what?
Yeah, exactly. You could go to an arcade and play a multi-slot, which is, you know, what we both grew up doing, and mm-hmm. like everyone else, that was your exposure to Neo Geo, was in the arcade. But at the time that this game was coming out was also when I finally started subscribing to Game Fan magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got in on that. I would buy that magazine at the newsstand at Stater Brothers or whatever,
mm-hmm.
At full cover price of fucking $5.99 or whatever it was.
Goddamn right.
And but I didn't start subscribing until like what would end up being like the final year of its publication.
Okay.
And I vividly remember, and actually,
it's kind of like showing up to a party really late. Like,
it's exactly what.
Hey guys,
it was.
I'm here,
and what a party it was, man! we could do a whole episode about Game Fan magazine because of it was like they were like the Howard Stern bad boys of video game journalism back then. Very famously, I think we did an episode about magazines. I think, and I probably told the story. If we didn't, I'm gonna tell it now. But there's this really famous example of how fucked up that magazine was, where the review for Cybermorph on Jaguar was like really good, like glowing, I mean. And the way the author of the review was writing about it was talking about how it was like this like transcendent experience that he's never had before. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about Cybermorph for the fucking Jaguar, okay? I'm a fan of that game, but there's nothing about that game that's transcendent at all. Anyway, it came out later.
You have to transcend yourself.
Yes, big time. Where did you learn how to drive? But anyway, it came out later on this like forum post of like the editor of Game Fan magazine that as a joke, for a lark, they spiked this dude's coffee with fucking LSD.
That rules.
Played Cybermorph and reviewed it all while high, tripping balls on acid.
what a great place to work. Game, not breaking any federal laws.
Not at all.
Whatsoever.
No. And that's the Game Fan magazine difference.
was Game Fan the one that did like the really funny like answering like reading readers' questions like in the back?
I mean, every magazine kind of did that thing, but Game Fans was like very pointed. Like,
right.
There was a certain attitude.
And, like, funny, like they would make fun.
Oh yeah, they would take the piss out of people.
Yeah,
because
I remember somebody, one of the reviewers, like in his reviews, like always pointed out that like if you're playing a racing game, having the third person view of a car is stupid.
Yeah.
You should always at all times play in first person.
Play it the right way.
That's how you drive a car.
Yeah. Now they were legendary dicks at this magazine.
Yeah.
Legendary.
And somebody wrote in kind of asking him to like explain his point of view.
Yeah.
And he wrote this big long thing saying like, here, if you wanted to drive a car with that view, here's what you would have to do. And he talked about building this like PVC contraption coming out of your car to be able to sit in a chair behind your car.
Like you're a director, like
it.
A crane camera.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
And I'll just never forget that.
Yeah.
Because like in his explanation, I was like, yeah, I guess.
That is the only way you
that
could
is
do.
The only way.
So that's so cool. Yeah, Game Fan difference all day, every day. But they wrote this review about Metal Slug 3 that was like maybe at that time. And maybe even since, like, I never read a more glowing review of a video game. And, like, mm-hmm. it got me so fucking pumped. And obviously, I definitely already played Metal Slug 1 because that was a huge hit in the arcades.
Yeah.
And then Metal Slug 2, less so because mm-hmm. it has a bunch of technical problems.
Issues.
But so I was like, and at this point, I was like already like always going to like NeoGeo.com and like I never owned anything, but I would always like lurk on their forums and basically just pine and dream mm-hmm. about being able to afford at that time a $300 video game, which is funny because I ended up, so I bought Metal Slug 3 for, it was like $400 aftermarket, mm-hmm. and I sold it for, I think, $2,200. And if I would have held on, I sold it in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have kept it, And sold it today, probably like $4,000 or $5,000.
Really?
Yeah. And it's only gone up. All these Neo Geo games have only gone up in price. But whatever. I ain't sore about it. I made such a huge profit. And I look at it as like, it's way better than the stocks because I got to play this like absolutely wonderful fucking pixel art run and gun shooter for many years before I fucking sold my stock.
Try to play your stocks, Wall Street assholes.
Yeah, you losers. Anyway, Metal Slug 3, love that fucking game. It is, it's Contra, but fucking done through the guise of like a flawlessly animated Disney movie.
Yeah, I'm trying to, could you top Metal Slug 3 as just a pure run and gun?
I personally don't. I think you can't. To me, it is the best run and gun game ever made.
I couldn't even. It's so good. I couldn't imagine what would.
Well, I mean, in the conversation, you have to talk about Contra. You have to talk about Gunstar Heroes.
Sure.
And all of those games are fucking wonderful. Love those games to death. But at the end of the day, Metal Slug 3 trumps them all. It just beats them all.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's my number 5. It was your number 10. So that is 10. When we get to the master
Metal Slug
list.
3 will be on the
It'll
top
be
10
on the master
sure.
list, but we'll have to battle over where it is on the position.
I'm going to laugh when we can't figure it out and it just becomes our number 1
yeah.
game.
Why not? I mean, yeah. At this point, why not?
I had 10, you had 5, number 1.
Yeah, I mean, logically it should be at number 7, but I know it's not going to be that easy. I know
it won't
it's not
be that
gonna,
easy.
Yeah.
Won't work that way.
Okay, what's your number what's your 5? What's your 5, guy?
So my 5 is Out of This World or Another World.
Mm-hmm. Great pick, by the way. I love that game.
Which is, an action adventure, but more poignantly, it's a cinematic platformer.
Yeah.
Well, I guess in that sense, I do have a 2D platformer, but yeah.
Yeah, but
these
are so much different.
The same.
Like I love this genre too. Like I love the original Prince of Persia, and I fucking adore Flashback. Flashback is my favorite Delphine Software game.
Okay,
I like it more than Out of This World, but I love Out of This World too. Like there is, what I appreciate about those, what I appreciate about that style of game is like you really have to earn it. Like mechanically,
you do.
You have to fucking put in the time and like learn all the different nuances of all the movements of these games. And if you can't get into that, then these games are not for you.
But the mechanical inputs of these games is what makes them so immersive.
Totally.
Just because, obviously, people know this game. The premise is that
it's been ported to like literally every fucking console
ever. You get warped into like this other world. But if you were to think about if you were an actual human being that this happened to,
yeah,
you would have clear limitations on your personal ability to survive in this
world. For sure,
world.
Yeah.
And the mechanics sort of deliver that kind of immersion, limiting you, and like you can't just run and jump. It's not a Mario game, right? You can't just jump on floating platforms. Like you have
or control the way your body moves midair.
Yeah,
yeah.
You have to work with your physical limitations that this guy has. But the game doesn't. I mean, it shows you a cutscene, but doesn't explain fucking anything else about what's going on.
It's a very, very mysterious game.
Yes, and you are told nothing other than the visual clues around you.
Yeah.
And yet, you can't help but moving forward. It's each little visual clue.
If you can get past, most people, the threshold is the first level. Most people cannot get past the first level because those little black slugs that if you run by them and they hit you with the poison and you die.
It's not that hard to get past the
first level. I agree with you, but good luck trying to convince fucking the public about that.
You spend more than 5 minutes with the game, you'll get past the first level. In any case, when it comes to being challenging, being immersive, and being enjoyable, I think, and the reason why this is on my list is I don't think that a unique story has been told in video game history quite like the way this game tells its story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you get in, you get captured after the first part. Then, you learn how to break out. You get your one weapon in the game, which is how you do
everything
basically.
Yeah.
So the mechanics are limiting, but they're simple and easy to grasp. And you get simple glimpses into the world around you that like create this atmosphere that it's everything the game is going to ask you to do is just completely unachievable. So like when you get to the first part that has an elevator, which is right after you
break out
of
the
cage,
yeah.
You get to the top and you can look through a window where you get, your first glimpse of like this this alien city that you're stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
And you instantly feel like there's no, like, how am I going to get out of here? Like, everything I just did was so hard.
Yeah.
And, like, this is what the game's going to walk me through.
And also the pacing of the game, like, it's relentless. Like, you never, and like, once you start get going, like, there are a few moments where you can take a breath and, like, there's just an empty screen or whatever. And when those moments come, like, you're so grateful for it. But outside of that handful, like, it's just, it never stops pushing you forward. And also, like, the sense of dread. You are going to die if you encounter enemies in this game.
Yeah, you're supposed to die.
Yeah.
Because it creates that sense of,
and you're
like,
so underpowered over yes. everything else in the game.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
And yet you find ways to get through.
Right.
And when you go back and play the game and you've already sort of figured out all the puzzles, you can run through the whole game pretty quickly, and it's like an exhilarating experience, as even when you go back and replay it,
right,
just because you're doing everything perfect and it becomes one smooth, unbroken run through the entire city.
Let me ask you this, did you ever beat this game as a kid on like a 16-bit platform?
Not on a 16-bit platform, but I did beat it teenage-ish okay. on computer.
I never beat this game, and that's certainly not because I owned it mm-hmm. for Super Nintendo since I was a little kid. But I so it wasn't for a lack of trying, but I never beat this game until the 20th anniversary version came out.
Okay.
And that was where I was just like, fuck this. I am going to beat this game. Like, I'm going to put the time in. I'm going to do it. And I cheated. Don't you think for a second I didn't fucking cheat. Of course I cheated. But it was more about, like, I wanted to finally put a coda on this thing. And the same exact thing is true with Flashback. I didn't beat it until the anniversary version mm-hmm. that came out for the Switch. And the only way I was able to beat it was because they added the rewind mechanic. Okay. There's no rewind mechanic in Out of This World, I don't think.
No.
In the remake, I mean. But the Flashback one there is. And, man, what a fucking wonderful feature that is.
Yeah, this is an adult game, right? It's not necessarily like made. So, like, if you if you were going to pick video game examples that are on the same, I don't know, artistic level of like Tale of Two Cities
yeah.
or like, you know, Picasso or whatever, like whatever art you want to choose as like shining examples of human achievement.
Right.
Like this, in my mind,
the movie Bloodsport, for example.
The movie Bloodsport. this would be a video game that I would choose to show as an example of what
can be done
with the video game
yeah.
medium when it comes to like just creating pure art. Yeah, that's what I think this game is.
I agree. It's a really, really good game, and it's deserving on A-list, that's for sure. We are going to move on to our number four spots. Daddy Likes a Fighting Game.
Yeah.
And this was really, really hard for me to nail down because the only thing I had, like you kept saying, like you wanted to hit genres and you know, have mm-hmm. your list like be well-rounded.
You knew you needed a fighting game.
Right. Everything else didn't matter to me, though, but one game had to be a fighting game on there because mm-hmm. it's my favorite genre of video games. So of all the fighting games that I love, and man, do I love a lot of them, I had to boil it down. And the one I chose was Street Fighter III Third Strike, which here's what's interesting about that is like I had to. Because I actually am the biggest fan of New Generation, which is the first version of the game.
Okay.
I love the backgrounds in that game. I think they're like just, you know, beautiful fucking paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's more frames of animation in New Generation than in the other versions. Because obviously there would be. There's like way less characters. So they can pack the frames in on those characters sure. and flesh those out. But like, you do have to... I mean, Third Strike is nothing. It's not ugly. It's very clearly not an ugly game. So, like, it's plenty decent to look at. But at the end of the day, of all the three Street Fighter III games, like, Third Strike is the most feature complete. Like, there's the biggest roster. And the characters that they did add in Third Strike, like, I love a weird fighting game character, and these are some of the weirdest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 12 is this, like, fucking... solid white, like milky android thing that can morph and turn into like blades. He's just super weird. Q is one of the coolest, mysterious characters in a fighting game ever because, like, the theory is that he's just like this like lurking hulking figure that is, he's like the evil Forrest Gump of fighting games, where like there's like pictures of like, you know, major world history events, and like somewhere in the background is this guy, this fucking silver faced robot lurking around in a trench coat. Like mm-hmm. that appeals to me, you know, like it's fucking cool and weird. But so even of all the Street Fighters, I think that the Street Fighter 3 series is the most impressive. And it is like pulling the curtain back from just fighting games. I think that Street Fighter 3 is like the final love letter to how video games used to be made. Mm-hmm. Like these are traditionally dot pixel graphics done in an era where like people were still using that as a contemporary way to make video games, but very clearly, you know, this game came out in 1999. Mm-hmm. So we're like all the way deep into 3D games at that point.
Sure.
And that's part of the reason why Street Fighter 3 in general wasn't certainly not to the success that Street Fighter 2 was because everyone was moving on.
Yeah.
Which is funny now, it's 2020. You know, this is fucking like 21 years later since the release of Third Strike. And now it seems like everyone and their mom is a fucking indie developer making a 2D game. So, like, it's funny to go back all those years and, like, it really, the writing was on the wall. Like, 3D video games,
sure.
That's the way things were going to go. But there was a certain, like steadfastness in, like, well, you know what, it might be out of vogue today, but obviously the shit's coming back. And a good analog, pun intended, to that is, like, the renaissance of fucking vinyl. Records now sell more music is sold on fucking records than on any other format today, which that says something. It says like, okay, well maybe we did figure out how to fucking market and produce and sell music like back in the goddamn 30s. And people like, that's what people want today. Like people, you can walk into any Target in America and buy a fucking Beyonce album on vinyl.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, people swear that it's the best form of listening to audio.
Yeah, audio. I mean, your audiophiles will swear by it, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's nothing to say of like the actual like tangibility of a record. Like buying a record and having it in your hand, and like the artwork is giant, and like you can do so many cool different things with the packaging. It's impressive. It's a big impressive thing, and that's mm-hmm. exactly how I feel about Street Fighter 3. It's a big fucking impressive thing.
Yeah,
that you can see the artistry and like the fucking manpower or the man hours that were sunk into this game.
Sure.
And that I haven't even spoken about the mechanics of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Like the mechanically, with just the parrying system that was brought into Street Fighter 3, that fundamentally changed the way fighting games were played. It added an entirely new layer of defensive play that wasn't ever in video games before. And I don't think it's been like hit. I mean, Garo, Mark of the Wolves has their just defend system, which is like that was SNK's answer to the parrying.
Mm-hmm.
But it still isn't as done as effectively as Street Fighter 3. And of all fighting games, and I am talking of all fighting games, some days, you know, I want to play a Mortal Kombat game, blah, blah, blah. But time and time and time again, if I'm in the mood to play a fighting game, it is going to be Street Fighter 3 Third Strike.
I think a lot of people would be happy to see this on the list.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I was sure your fighting game was going to be an SNK game.
Yeah. Well, it was going to be.
If it wasn't going to be SNK, this would be the
it
one.
Was going to be King of Fighters 98. But that I had to be honest with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I fucking love SNK, I mean, I don't have it. I got lots of tattoos. I only got one video game tattoo on my body, and that does say Neo Geo. Just to point that out.
Nobody's ever going to call you a non-believer, Brian.
Yeah, no, they will not. But yeah, at the end of the day, like the whole complete picture, I think there's more to appreciate in Third Strike than perhaps any other fighting game ever made. And that is exactly why it's so high up on my top 10 list.
Sure. So moving on to number
your number four.
My number four.
Yes.
Because you just did your number four.
I did, yes. Thank that, you for paying
wait,
attention.
Is that how this works? I got to start over.
Yeah. Let me erase all this shit. Hold on.
So my number four is Firaxis Civilization VI.
Okay.
So
real quick, before you jump into this.
Yeah.
Why is it not in Civilization II, which I think is the people's choice?
Hold up for a second.
Okay.
So, second strategy game, this is what's called turn-based strategy 4X game. It ended up becoming really the only 4X game that, you know, probably controls.
Can
like
you define what 4X means?
So 4X is I don't know what all four of them stand for, but it's like economy, military, building, and like it basically there people have labeled like four components of a 4X game.
Oh, and it's like a part of the gameplay loop.
Part of an empire building game.
Gotcha.
So right, so like military, economy, this kind of stuff.
I never heard that term before. This is like the blooper. Really? What's it called? The blobber.
No, so Sega's making a new 4X game that's supposed to give Civilization a run for their money.
Really? Is that the Total War people that are
making it? No. It's not Creative Assembly. It's, I forget who's making it, but it's called Humankind.
Okay.
And it does look freaking awesome, and I can't wait to play it, and we'll see if Civilization... I'm glad that they're doing it, because Civilization needs to... Six is the newest one.
Yeah.
And I'll get to why I'm putting that. I think 6 is the epitome of this, of what Civilization is trying to do, but I also don't see them innovating from here.
Okay.
Which is why I'm happy Humankind is coming out to kind of force the issue.
Yeah, it's a torch pass.
Because what Civilization 6 is the refinement of every aspect of everything that's been put in the game since the first one, but not changed all that much.
Gotcha.
Right.
Because I know in the past... Civilization fans, because I have no podium in this race, obviously.
Right.
I don't give a shit. I mean, I did play a lot of Civ 2 as a kid, and I actually did kind of get into that, which is not, it's very much outside of my wheelhouse. But I remember like 4 and 5 in particular were pretty heavily shit on. But 6 has gotten like tons of fucking praise.
Yeah, 6 is just, it's... When it comes to a Civilization game, I personally think it's the perfect example.
Okay.
Civ 2 is right up there, and I was debating between Civ 2.
Well, Civ 2 is like one of the most beloved PC games of all time.
Right. And I would actually put Civ 4 in that same group.
Okay.
I thought Civ 4 was fantastic. A lot of people don't like it because they're fucking weakling cowards that can't handle a stack of... my 60 tanks coming into the city where they have to sit there for 30 minutes going one by one through them. But I love that. But Civ 6 doesn't have any of those quote unquote problems. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great example of what it is. And Civilization, again, going back to like my criteria, the amount of people that I meet that don't play any video games, but play Civilization.
Yeah, this is totally true.
There's hundreds of thousands.
I have a coworker. He's an IT guy, and like his passion is like networking and IT and all that shit. But like the only video game he plays is Civilization games.
I had some friends in college who were like going to law school, and they both, I mean, they had played video games, but like didn't play any video games anymore.
Weren't into them.
Except for Civ 6.
Yeah,
or Civilization in general. At the time, it was 4. So it just. Its influence kind of speaks for itself. It completely took over the market that it created. It hasn't allowed any room for anybody to really get in and shake it.
Right.
And it's one of those games that have gone beyond the video game world.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Into other people's lives.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Civ 6 has been ported to the Switch. It's like it's breaking out of the PC shell too. So it's like adding to what you're saying. It's like it's transcending.
They've done that a couple times, or have tried to. Those aren't the
best. Oh, I didn't
versions.
Know that. I thought Civ 6 was like a big deal because it was being ported to consoles.
I think they did. They did Civ 5, and I want to.
Oh,
say
you know, you're right. You're right. I remember actually playing Civ 5 on a PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're getting into the upper echelon, the elite of the elite.
These are the elite
top threes, man. Okay, so this is going, for those who know me, this is going to shock none of them. but for those that don't know me, you probably may even think that this is plum loco. But again, fuck you. I don't care what you think.
That's fine.
So my number three is Shenmue. And of all of the three Shenmue games, that's because that's right, Daddy. Shenmue 3 fucking exists. And I have played it and I beat it. And
congratulations
I just,
on
thank
being
you
able
so much.
To say that, Brian.
And I also fucking just recently slogged through their awful, awful fucking story quest DLC that they just added. But it was charmingly awful. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
But a lot of Shenmue fans are pretty pissed about it because it was like really difficult and obtuse. But I know what I sign up for. And that's difficult and obtuse because that's the Shenmue difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked the original Shenmue over the other games because it is more of like a self-contained game. Like even though it does end like every other Shenmue game, it ends on an open cliffhanger. It still feels like more complete. Like the first episode, you go on Rose Hazuki's mission to avenge the death of his father. And by the time you know who is responsible for it and what they're a part of, you are getting on a ship to go explore a whole new country.
Yep.
And if there was never another Shenmue game made after that, it probably would have been. And this hurts to say this because I don't really feel this way, but it would have been okay because like it's a complete fucking experience.
Yeah. Well, once they came out with Shenmue 2, now it's like, well, now you guys got to do the rest of it.
Well, and Shenmue 2 ends on like an egregious cliffhanger. Like it ends, not only does it end where you're like everything is upside down. Like you're like, what? Then now there's magic in this game? Because it really ends that way. And for fans to have wait like 18 years or whatever it was, 17 years to get any sort of fucking closure. And what's funny is that Shenmue 3, having completed that game 100%, also ends on a cliffhanger.
Well, yeah. So, it's like there's actually supposed to be like 25 parts.
Well, it was 15.
Right? 15.
He the initial concept, and this is the balls on you, Suzuki, the fucking chutzpah on this guy. He thought that he could get 15 games made. So Shenmue 1 is chapter 1 of the story.
Of course he did.
Shenmue 2 is supposed to be chapters 2, 3, and 4.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And then Shenmue 3, I think, is only 5 and 6.
Okay.
But so I just read a thing recently. So Deep Silver was the, obviously, infamously, Shenmue 3 was one of the most successful Kickstarters of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was funded by us for us.
Yep.
But then later it got money from Sony so that it was console exclusive to PlayStation 4. And then another company called Deep Silver came and like kind of rounded out publishing duties.
Mm-hmm.
So they recently said that they didn't lose money on Shenmue, but they didn't really make a lot of money on Shenmue. So it is kind of up in the air. There hasn't been any official announcements. If you beat Shenmue 3 at the end of the credits, there's like a really awesome letter that Yu Suzuki wrote saying like, thank you so much for allowing me to continue my life's work. Like you guys have no idea what this means to me. And I was like, I think I do. You know? but he says like, join me in Shenmue 4.
Yeah.
So you can say that's an official announcement or
he's
not.
He's willing to do it if there's funding.
Yeah, exactly. Get it done. And if you need me to back up the fucking Brinks truck, I'll be there. Don't worry about me. You can depend on me, Mr. Suzuki.
Yeah.
But so Shenmue, I'm going to break this down quickly into what I think is undeniable about Shenmue and then the things that are obviously more like my personal slant. So what's undeniable about Shenmue, especially at its time, is that there was not a video game that came fucking close to being as like realistic to a real world experience at that time than Shenmue.
Yeah.
Like, and so just graphically at the time, the only other game that like looked as realistic as Shenmue from just like a model standpoint was, I would probably say the original Half-Life, but Shenmue wiped the fucking floor with Half-Life in terms of the graphical fidelity on the character models.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Shenmue also is I don't think you get to Grand Theft Auto 3, which was an absolute fucking paradigm shift of a video game. I don't think you get there without Shenmue existing.
So I was just going to say the same thing because even if Shenmue wasn't successful financially.
Right. And it was not.
What it did do was show developers around the world what was possible.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of people took what they saw in Shenmue
mm-hmm.
and ran out. And eventually we got the open world games of today.
Oh, for sure. Like Shenmue is without a doubt the patient zero of what we now know as a modern open world game.
Yep.
There's no question about that. I think from a narrative standpoint, like obviously your mileage may vary. Like I happen to have got so fucking sucked into the characters in the world of Shenmue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this on the show before, but I had like a really unique experience playing this game. I was living with a Japanese exchange student at the time who was homesick. So I got to play this game with like that as like a lens to look through.
With a guide.
Yeah. Well, not only a guide, but it was like all these like subtleties and nuances that I never would have picked up on as an American person.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was there to like fill in all those gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And I think full transparency, if I didn't have that playthrough, I probably still would have liked Shenmue a lot because I do genuinely enjoy the experience of Shenmue, but I probably wouldn't love it like I do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I obsessively love Shenmue and make no bones about that. Now, so that kind of ends the undeniable like influence of Shenmue. The more personal stuff for me is I have such an attachment to like the weird, almost like dead-eyed fucking puppetry of these games. They, for whatever reason, they like the developers of Shenmue have this fondness of making ugly people that I really do genuinely appreciate. Like, if you look at a game like, you know, Grand Theft Auto 5 or whatever, like even like a character that's supposed to represent like a fucking, you know, disgusting derelict drug addict is like has like a pretty symmetrical face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In Shenmue games, it seems like they go above and beyond out of their way to make people look ugly.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of, like I commend it because it's that's fucking real life, man. We're not all goddamn models. Like we're just not.
Yeah.
And no other video game series like touches on that. There's characters in Shenmue that are so weird looking that like you can't, at least I can't help but like get an appreciation for them. Just be like, man, again, the ball's on Yu Suzuki to make some of these choices.
Well, like when Yu Suzuki goes after something.
Oh, he like, fucking, he achieves.
I'm going to make a realistic game.
Yeah.
And like, I can just see him going, no, we've
got. Not ugly enough.
This isn't how ugly people look in real life.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you know me, Daddy. I can fucking just talk about this thing, but I'll save it. Because you know we want to keep some listeners.
Yeah, I think there's honorable reasons to include Shenmue.
Yeah, well, there is the undeniable stuff, the mm-hmm. undeniable influences, and then they end where they end, and then my personal opinion picks up there. But
right.
Again,
and I would also say we have Miyamoto on here multiple times.
Yeah,
we have. I mean, Yu Suzuki, I think totally is deserved of being on lists multiple times.
I mean, if we were doing like a list of like top five most influential video game developers of all mm-hmm. time, he's on that list. Like 1,000% he's on that list.
Yeah. So I'm glad naturally like he was just called out.
He just got on there by way of Shenmue and not like, you know, say like Space Harrier.
Yeah.
So
Outrun or
any of these other beloved games. No. I picked the one that people love to shit on. But that I will literally defend with my life. All right, what's your number three?
So my number three is also the only shooter I have. I mentioned, I think.
When I was talking about Ikaruga.
You were
alluding to this one.
Yeah, I don't have any horizontal or vertical shooters, which I think if someone was going to put a shooter to put on their list, like they would probably choose one of those.
I think so. Well, because a rail shooter.
And that's what I'm choosing as a rail shooter.
Yeah, but a rail shooter is like a, it's a thing unto itself. It really is.
It is. It's a subgenre of a shooter. At the end of the day,
you're fucking shooting shit, you know, end of discussion.
Yeah.
But the way mechanically that they work is, it does feel, and it feels way different.
Mm-hmm. So, and this is Panzer Dragoon's Vi. I don't think this would be on most people's top 10 list.
Yeah.
But I do think it deserves to be there.
It certainly would be on most Saturn fans' lists.
Oh, yeah.
For fucking sure.
Well, yeah. That's for sure. The reason why it's number three on my list just goes back to the way that I chose all of these, which is number one, immersion. And this game, first of all, the art style is extremely unique.
Yeah, big time.
And I don't think anyone could. And the art in and of itself is so unique and intriguing that it to this day has spawned interest in this game.
I think so too.
Well, even around the story.
And you said it too. The right word, which you just nailed out of the chute, is intriguing. Like not only is this unique art, but it's artwork that like you cannot help but be drawn to it.
Well, and it feels like there's a story behind the artwork itself.
Totally.
And when you play Panzer Dragoon Zwei, which is a far superior game to the first one, all mechanical stuff is fixed.
Oh yeah.
Everything it runs smooth. Mm-hmm. Graphics are better. But
it's probably the best looking, in my opinion. Maybe Saga edges it out, but I think Panzer Dragoon Zwei is the best looking Sega Saturn game. Personally.
Yeah, I think to this day, even though, I mean, all 3D 32-bit games have aged a little bit.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But I think Panzer Dragoon is stylized enough that it's not jarring.
No, it's in that sweet spot. Yeah. It totally is.
And as you start to play the game, like you see a cutscene,
mm-hmm.
And the cutscene just throws you into, and they don't tell you how to play the game or what the hell you're doing or what you have the ability to do, like,
right.
like, you know, do branching paths
right.
and like grow your dragon and do all these things. You just start playing the game, and the first level is in of itself an introduction to how to play the game.
Right.
Because there's only a few things you can do naturally. And then you go into the second level where like you spontaneously spawn wings out of your dragon like
yeah.
mid level and start flying, and like it just every progression of the game just really immerses you into the world you're playing in.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like you're somewhere else. Mechanically, like as a shooter, the patterns that and the introduction of enemies and the variations of what different enemies can do and how you have to attack them, I think is just perfectly done.
Yeah.
Even when you get to what would be the fourth level, which is like this tube water level,
mm-hmm.
It's probably the most frantic of the levels, but because they've taught you the way that the patterns develop
mm-hmm.
so well in the previous levels that what could be a frantic disaster of a level.
You feel like almost equipped
yes,
by that point.
Yes. Yeah. You feel perfectly equipped and you feel like you can control the frantic nature of the level.
And the level that you're talking about, it's such a doozy. It's so much fun to play too.
Oh, and again, the stylistic and atmosphere nature of this game
mm-hmm.
make that level particularly cool
yeah.
as you go from these like really fast paced tube sections into like large open, you know, I don't know, water caves or whatever that are, you know, you can't even see the end of it.
There are absolutely endless water caves. That's
yes.
the only way to call it.
I know. There's probably a cistern. I don't know. Something better.
So I actually am, I know how much you love, and I have known this about you since I first met you. I know how much you love Zvi, but
mm-hmm.
I am a little surprised. I knew there would be a Panzer Dragoon game on your list,
sure.
without question. But I am surprised you picked this over Orta.
So the reason why I picked Zvi over Orta
mm-hmm.
is I think. Don't get me wrong. As just a pure rail shooter.
Yeah.
So if we were looking at like the second part of my criteria, challenging.
Yeah.
Just the mechanical nature, Orta is a lot more of that.
Oh yeah.
It is very challenging, but it almost, I hate to say suffer cause I think that game's so good,
mm-hmm.
but it almost suffers from just trying a little too hard.
Okay.
Whereas the pure raw fundamental nature of what Panzer Dragoon Zvi does for rail shooters is just so perfectly executed in Zvi that in its purity, I think it's a better game.
Okay. Now I can see, cause I love Orta. I think it's the best rail shooter of all time. But Zvi is a more like concise and well-designed experience.
Yeah.
I think it's tough to argue.
And this would be on the same short list of, you know, artistic examples of the medium.
Yeah.
Like Out of This World that I would think would be on a short list of an example of this is what you can create.
Yeah, this is what you
medium.
Can achieve to do. That remake is it's coming. It's coming soon.
Yeah, well, they're doing the first one first, so we'll see how it goes. But.
Well, I mean, that to me the original Panzer Dragoon is in desperate need of a remake.
Oh yeah,
so that's cool that they're doing it.
Agreed.
Okay, so this is number two, and here's a fucking fun hot little piece of trivia. Our number twos match up.
They are exactly the same.
So this is going to be a slam dunk when it comes to the master list.
Yep.
We're just going to scoot this right into that number two spot.
I would also think for most, especially listeners of the show, would be surprised that this didn't make it number one on either of our lists.
Yeah, I think it easily could have, depending on the day and you know what brand of cheeseburger I currently
mm-hmm.
have in my tummy.
Sure.
But we are talking about Mario 64, the... you know, linchpin in taking video games into the third dimension.
Yep.
Because before this, you have a couple PC games that tried. Descent is a popular one to point out. And of course, the, you know, complete, absolute radioactive shit fire fest that was Bubsy 3D.
Right.
Actually predates Mario 64 by like a month or two. So there were attempts at making a proper 3D video game.
Sure, but Mario 64 brought it to the masses.
And it, like, you know, to this day, it's still, I mean, yeah, there's little areas where the camera gets caught up and stuff like that, but it is still, I think, the rubric in which 3D, especially 3D, like, character platformers are based
mm-hmm.
on. Like, there's just so much good stuff about Mario 64. And just anecdotally, I don't think, aside from my number one, which I'll get into when it's time, and maybe not, but I think Mario 64 is probably the video game I have played the most times in my life.
Really?
I at least play it once a year, where I, like, and I'm talking, like, play it. Like, at least get to the final Bowser and beat the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I might not get all 121 stars every single time.
Right.
But I absolutely take it from beginning to, yeah, and I do it once a year and have done it once a year since fucking 1996.
What's kind of amazing when you think about what they did with Mario 64 is that there's 3D platforming and either games or parts of games today.
Yeah.
That just in the way that they space platforms or set things up.
Yeah.
That make mistakes that even Mario 64 didn't make.
Oh, for sure.
Like the blueprint of how to do it has been introduced, and like modern games often suffer from not going back and looking at how things were done before.
I mean, the answer is just copy this game.
Yeah.
Like, that's the exactly. fucking answer. And Nintendo themselves would do it. When you look at Mario Odyssey, mm-hmm. which is like just an absolute pitch fucking perfect game.
Mm-hmm.
They take Mario 64 and they fix the one problem with Mario 64, which is like the dependability of the camera. But that's not even to say like there wasn't a camera before Mario 64. Like
right.
the fact that they made that, they've designed the fucking controller, which has a handful of fans and then far more detractors. The N64 controller was 100%, and this Miyamoto, you know, admits this in many interviews.
Mm-hmm.
That controller was designed to play a game, this game.
Yep.
And like, it is the perfect example of like, you know, hand in hand, like hardware and software working together.
So why would you put Mario 64 on this list and not say Odyssey or Galaxy 2 or?
So okay, that's
any of the other ones.
Because that's simple. That's just like many other things in my life. It is influenced by the warm fuzzies that I get from nostalgia.
Okay.
And Mario Odyssey is like to me it's the perfect 3D Mario game. Like it's so much better than 3D World and 3D Land on 3DS, and I think it's better than both of the Galaxy games, and it's fucking definitely better than Sunshine. It is technically better than Mario 64, but it doesn't make me feel as good as Mario 64. Like, going into just booting that game up and, like, fucking around with his face on the menu is something I still do as a grown-ass man, as a parent. I will still put that on and fuck with his nose and his hat because it makes me giggle. Or just running around the castle. Like, I am immediately transported back to when I was 13-year-old fucking N64 kid, you know, like who got to open an N64 on Christmas and just fucking, even though I already knew it was there because I snooped for every present ever, I still opened it up and like exploded with excitement.
Yeah.
Just fucking exploded with excitement.
So, and this game does what a lot of the other games do on our list, that they just kind of drops you into the world without a whole lot of explanation necessarily.
I mean, they teach you, the only thing they teach you in the beginning is like the concept of a third person camera,
right?
Which you kind of have to do because it wasn't done before this.
Yeah,
but then all the other like moves in the game, and like Mario has something, you know, like around 30 different moves that he can do.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those things, like you might read about one in like a sign in a level, but then you have to go. The game doesn't tell you to go do that.
I mean, even going to like go search, like walk through the castle,
yeah.
and figure out where to start and kind of like where other things are going to be. Like,
right.
Like you just kind of, the game walks you through it so gradually without
definitely
without being condescending,
right?
Which is what a lot of
or too handholdy.
Yeah, which is what a lot of these games do, and Mario 64 I think does, especially when you think about the fact that it was simultaneously introducing things like cameras, introducing 3D,
mm-hmm.
introducing platforming in 3D, like so it was introducing so much like paradigm shifts to the player,
yeah,
and just flawlessly walks them through it,
yeah,
almost like
it's
games,
like it's effortless.
Games should have been like this always.
Exactly, that's when that is the perfect thing to say about Mario 64. It's so like revolutionary that when you're like us and you got to experience a lot of video games before this game came out, once you play it, you're like, wow, what the fuck were we doing? Like,
yeah.
this is what it should have been the whole time. Cybermorph should have been this, Atari. Get your shit together. So, I mean, the other thing, too, that I think is important, and this might be a hot take. This is definitely going to be a hot take.
Okay.
I've said, you know, look in retrospect, because I was an N64 teen, thank you very much, mm-hmm. which was actually kind of a difficult thing to do because as a snot-nosed fucking attitude teenager, you look at what's on the other side of the fence, and there were so many PlayStation games that I was just flatly jealous of.
Twisted Metal!
Yeah, fucking
wait a second.
Attitude, brother. Wait. Laura Croft's got boobs.
I'm inserting a small hot take into the middle of your hot take.
Oh, man.
I see Twisted Metal on far too many top lists.
Mm-hmm.
It pops up all the time. It is one of the worst games ever made, and it sucks, and get it off your list. Continue.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. But it has an undeniable level of tude.
Sure.
But I think that while it's true that like if you take the library of the N64 and the PlayStation and you just fucking dollars to donuts compare them, mm-hmm. then the N64 is a fucking joke. It really is. However, PlayStation, where's your Mario 64? It ain't there. That is such a fucking feather in the N64's cap mm-hmm. that it keeps it in the conversation.
Relevant.
Like, yeah.
And well, and Ocarina of Time and Mario Kart, but I get your point.
Yeah. Or
Mario 64 is by far the bigger monkey of those.
Absolutely.
Three.
100%. Well, we both knocked out our twos in one shot there.
Yeah, that was sweet.
So now it's time for the big dog, number one. Dun, dun, dun. My number one video game of all time.
In the history.
Of all video games. Kasumi Ninja for the Atari Jaguar. Now, hear me out. Hear me out. Hold on. I'm just kidding. It is Chrono Trigger. So you have Chrono Trigger at your number eight.
My number eight.
My number one video game of all time is Chrono Trigger. And it was hard to be able to pick what Chrono Trigger over Mario 64.
Because
mm-hmm. just in terms of like the sheer volume of my life spent playing with those two video games.
Sure.
I do think Mario 64 edges it out a touch. But I do mean a touch. Because I have played through Chrono Trigger so many fucking times. And everything about the game is Dream Team stuff to the point where so you have Sakaguchi, Nobuo Uematsu, Kira Toriyama, who are all like not only like no strangers to video games, but they're also like kings of their field.
Yep.
Like Umatsu's music is played by symphonies across the world.
Right.
Sakaguchi is like the father of the proper Japanese RPG,
mm-hmm.
and Akira Toriyama is for those people who like Dragon Ball, and there are a lot of you out there. Like, he's, like, a guy who established, like, the way you draw anime.
Yeah. And, yeah, he's a manga freaking god.
Yeah. And so you have all of these people all together working on one game. And it's a fucking goddamned masterpiece. So I think when we talked about when we talked about your entry with Chrono Trigger, we touched on the New Game Plus stuff. That, to me, is so important. Like, it is really what set apart Chrono Trigger from anything else. I love Final Fantasy VI. It's easily in the conversation for best role-playing game of all time. It's certainly, mm-hmm. in my opinion, certainly the best Final Fantasy game of all time. But as big and as deep and as fucking, like, involved that game is, like, once you beat it, you're done. Like, there is, like, some post-game stuff that you can do. Or, like, when you get to the World of Ruin, and it's just like completely open and you just kind of have to do what just figure out shit and do it at your own pace kind of a thing.
Right.
Chrono Trigger encourages you to play a role-playing game over and over and over again. And it does it in the most genius way ever by having these multiple endings. And no other role-playing game had that before Chrono Trigger. And once Chrono Trigger did it, it was like a thing where the whole like Square Enix, all of those companies were just like, oh shit. Like, yeah, why didn't we do that? Fuck. And now they all have that stuff. Well, not all of them, but it's like you could clearly tell, like, this game is inspired by Chrono Trigger. And speaking of that, there are so many fucking games that are inspired by Chrono Trigger. Off the top of my head, there's the I Am Setsuna, which was published by Square Enix, is like a fucking shot-for-shot remake of Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
It's not as good because it's missing some of the certain necessary ingredients there. But there's tons and tons of indie games that are not responsible, but fucking clearly dipping into the Chrono Trigger well for inspiration. I mean, that game was so popular for multiple generations of players that it's like almost impossible not to get inspiration from Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And Chrono Trigger itself is inspired by the Christian Bible because Chrono fucking dies and it's the hero's journey, like he dies and gets resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, you know, that's fucking That's cool. Like, there isn't another game where that happens. Your main... Imagine a Sonic game where fucking Sonic dies. And then everyone is really sad because Sonic dies.
Sonic would never allow that to happen.
Oh, he's just too fast. He's just too fast. But I mean, that literally happens in Chrono Trigger. Like, your main fucking character, the guy who the name of the game is based on, dies.
Well, that's the thing about Chrono Trigger is it's not... I mean, the graphics are great. The fighting mechanic is great.
Oh, man, the fucking battles.
Atmosphere, immersion, everything's great.
Yeah.
But the story really defines why Chrono Trigger is so good.
The way that the story and the characters interplay with each other.
Yes, and well, unfolds
it, there's, in there's ways. Nothing. There's no other role-playing game, and this game came out in 1995. And in my opinion, there's no other role-playing game, at least that I've played. And admittedly, I love the genre, but I have dipped out in the last like fucking 15 years or so. So I can't speak to, you know, your Final Fantasy 15s and I'm never ever going to fucking speak to Kingdom Hearts because that shit is not for me. But
I can't see Kingdom Hearts having. I haven't played it either. I can't. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Can't see it having the same level of complexity.
I can't. But just the way that like you're so fucking invested in all of the characters in Chrono Trigger. Like you care so much about all of them. Even like the fucking stupid cave girl who like doesn't really like speak all that much. You still give you give many a hoots about her.
Mm-hmm.
And each like the fact that like each character has like its own like time and universe that just fits so perfectly together like a beautiful jigsaw puzzle. Like everything about this game just works together well. And that's nothing to say about the battles. Like I honestly think that the battle system in Chrono Trigger, it might be the most fun like playing battle system in any RPG ever. Like I like Grandia 2 just like anyone else. Mm-hmm. I think Grandia 2 did a really good job. The Xeno series, like the Xenoblades of the world, that's a really really fun battle system. But both of those draw their inspiration from Chrono Trigger, and there's not a fucking doubt about it, Jack.
Yeah.
So yeah, Chrono Trigger from your old pal BT is the best video game ever made, bar any. And special runner-up, of course, Kasumi Ninja for the Atari Jaguar. That's 1B. 1B is Kasumi Ninja.
So, and again, for Chrono Trigger, I think a lot of people would put that number one.
Oh yeah, I'm not fucking breaking new ground there, Jack.
No. Yeah, but neither I think. Especially with time, will my number one,
mm-hmm.
if it's not already on a lot of people's number one of all time, and that's Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Right.
I think, so a big theme with all the games that I've chosen is it's either broken down to its most simplistic, pure purpose of a video game,
uh-huh.
or it's completely immersive in how it puts you into another world and asks you to play a role in that world.
Right.
And Zelda Breath of the Wild, I think, is not only pure from a mechanical video game standpoint,
mm-hmm.
in how you play it, and what it's asking you to do, but from an immersion standpoint, I just think that it is the perfect example of what an immersive video game can be.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
When you start, again, just... I mean, obviously, most people listening to this podcast have probably played Breath of the Wild.
Yeah,
so,
by this point, for sure.
But again, this is another game where I've introduced it to people who do not play video games.
Yeah.
And they spend hundreds of hours in this game.
Yeah, definitely.
It transcends, like, the video game market. It becomes bigger than what it is. And this game has done it on a console that people had a lot of doubts about.
What it was coming off of the heels of the Wii U, which is like, I mean, like I loved the Wii U during its time, and I still play the Wii U, even though like that's becoming less and less of a thing because of all these Switch ports. But like, I think that the Wii U, it's in this spot where like it's hard to deny its failures, and it is like, which sucks because there's some fucking shiny gems on there, including this game.
Yeah,
don't forget, Breath of the Wild came out on the Wii U.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Wii U is kind of going to end up being almost like the Saturn.
Yeah, I think so.
The Saturn of Nintendo. A lot of really great games on a not so...
Yeah, but unlike the Saturn, though, like all of those really good games have gotten new life. Yeah. Yeah, and there's so many Saturn games that have just stayed on
Let's
the Saturn.
Let's just say Nintendo might be a little bit better of a company than Sega.
Yeah, maybe. You think.
But, like, here's an example. A lot of games on these lists, and a lot of game on most top 10 lists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ultimately, like, what's a game, right? Like, what is a game? You know, games are a lot of things, but the best, most popular games, sports games, board games, whatever, can be played from anywhere from like a third grader to an adult.
Yeah.
And be completely enjoyable.
For sure.
This is a game that transcends, it transcends that age gap.
That's for sure.
It transcends the experience gap. It transcends interest gaps.
Yeah.
Like whether you like video games or not. It completely speaks to people the same way really good pieces of, you know, paintings or
timeless movies, yeah,
or books do.
Right.
And so when I had to look at my list and I had to say, what's that one game that really establishes the video game media as something that will never disappear ever?
Yeah.
And like Breath of the Wild,
it's one of those temples.
It has to be the,
yeah,
the one of the temple.
Yeah.
Me.
One of the things that I love this game. It didn't make it into my top 10 because I'm a stubborn, curmudgeon-y old man.
Right. But we gotta cover like Clock Tower.
Exactly. The important things.
Yeah.
Totally. But I love Breath of the Wild. Like, I fucking adore it. So I'm with you 100% of the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I appreciate the most about Breath of the Wild is that they took it all the way back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
Where you go look at the original Legend of Zelda, mm-hmm, which is just like, it just plucks you into this world and they're like, good luck, idiot.
Here's a sword.
Yeah. Go figure it out. And the fact that Breath of the Wild did that and doing it on the heels of Skyward Sword, mm-hmm, which the biggest criticism of that game, and rightfully so, is that for the first fucking 6 hours, you're playing through this annoying, super boring tutorial where they're literally telling you, like, push the A button to use your sword. And you're like, I know, I'm fucking an adult. I've played all of these games. It's just like, Jesus Christ.
Well, and there's zero exploration in Skyward
Sword. Oh, well, I mean, yeah, comparatively for sure. But like, you can't say there isn't, you can't say zero exploration in Skyward Sword because it still is a Zelda game. There still is your heart pieces to find.
Yeah,
and like
the sky zone or whatever.
But I mean,
you fly around it.
It's all moot point because it's apples to oranges when you're talking Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
The thing that you and I both share in common with this game is we both were parents when this game came out.
Mm-hmm.
And my son was only 3 when I started playing it. He's 5 now and he's playing through it on his own now. To further illustrate your point of how this game is like, it can be so challenging, but at the same time be so open to players of any age.
Yep.
But when he was 3 and I started playing through this, it was like a matter of like, if I didn't play it, which obviously I'm going to fucking play it. It's a new Zelda game.
Right.
But he would like wake up in the morning, like every morning was Christmas.
Yeah.
And he could not wait to be able to watch me play this game.
So
it was like a really good bonding experience.
So yeah, me and my daughter is older than your kid. So, you know, she was like probably 7 when we were playing through this.
Yeah.
We played the entire game together.
Mm-hmm.
And when we beat it, she started crying.
Yeah. I've heard that story too from not just you, but from other. I think Uncle Bob has the exact same fucking story.
Like when she realized there was no more game to play.
Yeah.
Like she was
like distraught.
Emotionally
yeah.
depressed about it.
Yeah.
And I think you may be older and more emotionally mature, but it has that effect on people.
Yeah.
Like I went back through and did the Master Quest and undid
because you're a
everything.
Fucking maniac.
Yeah. And I beat it and I did everything, including the Master Sword, which is one of the hardest things I've had to do in video games ever,
yeah,
is unlock the Master Sword in the Master Quest. It is so insanely difficult. But like I realized when I finished the Master Quest that I was doing it because I didn't want the original game to end
right.
in the first place.
Totally.
And then when the Master Quest ended, I've nothing else to do. I've already done all the temples.
See, that's exactly like Chrono Trigger.
I'm like, God, I need more
yeah.
to do.
When Chrono Trigger, originally when I played through it back in 1995, and when Chrono Trigger ended and I beat it, I was like, I was sad.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's where New Game Plus is so amazing.
Yeah.
Because now there's an excuse to go back and play it like immediately after.
Right.
The games that do that and do that well, like that's why these games are our number ones.
Yeah. And I can totally see the same reason being behind your number one and my number one, Chrono Trigger and Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And, well, we'll save it for when we start arguing our final top 10.
Right.
But I think what I will say is there's an argument to be made that Breath of the Wild is the pinnacle example of what an immersive, fun, and challenging video game is.
Let me ask you a very important question. Yes. In Breath of the Wild, is there a Scotsman who lifts up his kilt and throws a fireball out of his crotch?
Well, no.
Okay. Then I think the discussion here is over. Well, thank you
but
so you much.
But you can ride your horse off a cliff.
All right. Now we're back at the conversation. okay. Well, this has been a lot of fun. This has been a hoot. And when we get someday in the future, we will revisit these lists for the battle that will be the Master 10 list. But until then, I want to leave the people with this, because we never do this because we're bad at podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to hear other people's top tens. So Gary, that's you.
Yeah.
Hit us up on our Facebook. You know, you can either fucking direct message us or just post on our shits. But it would be a lot of fun to hear about some of your guys' top tens, and maybe we can talk about them here on the show. So please do that. And with that,